I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
Talk Central, episode 218 for the week starting 13 May 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, MultiChoice fights the prospect of regulation to contain its dominance in pay TV.
Also this week, Nomvula Mokonyane says little on digital migration. Naspers buys Flipkart, or flips Flipkart rather. Vodacom wants 5G spectrum allocated now. And we talk about Google's big I.O. developer conference.
Yes, indeed. It's Sunday, not Friday, but it's still time for us to talk tech. Let's get into it.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
Yeah, Sunday afternoon again. I kind of like this time to record the show, actually. It's much more relaxed than a Friday afternoon when we're trying to clear the emails for the week and all the rest of it.
Yeah, true. But I am in like that mindset of, oh, you need to think of work now. But no, not really. It's just such a relaxed Sunday.
This is work? Not really.
Chatting about all the coolest stuff in tech.
Absolutely. And of course, if you are listening live to the show and you want to participate, if you've got a view on anything we're talking about today or have any questions for us, please do send us a WhatsApp message, preferably a voice note, and we can include it on air. The number to use, very easy to remember, 071-999-1111. That's 071-999-1111. And let's go to those messages. Not a voice note this morning, but we have a message here. Who's it from? Let's have a look. It's from Tafadzwa. And Tafadzwa says, "Hey guys, thanks for the great show. What are your thoughts on the FTTH products offered by the mobile network operators? I'm on Vodacom Fiber because that's the only option available to me on a 20/10 megabit per second asymmetrical capped product. And I've not had any downtime for almost a year. I'm paying $7.99 a month for 300 gigabytes of capped, unshaped, as opposed to $8.99 for shaped, uncapped." And then he's included a speed test showing a pretty solid 20 meg down and 10 meg up. Vodacom Fiber is not that broadly available. I actually recorded a very interesting podcast on, I think it was Monday, with Shamil Jusup, the CEO of Vodacom. We had a wide-ranging discussion, and he said that fiber is an area where Vodacom needs to focus more attention. In fact, in their most recent annual report, which was released around May or June last year, they said that they have not performed according to their own targets in the fiber market, and they're going to be ramping up investment there. Whether that means acquisitions, and there's certainly some rumors that Vodacom is eyeing a potential acquisition, which I can't really talk about at this stage because I haven't firmed it up yet, but there's some interesting chit-chat, so interesting rumors and speculation going on in the market about possible deals. So, I don't know if we're both on Vumatel, so I don't know if you have a specific view on the mobile operators' fiber offerings.
Well, I've been with Cell C since day one when I got my installation.
On top of Vumatel,
offered a very good package. The reason why I went with them is they had a good package and they paid for the installation as one of those kind of early startup, marketing expats that they had. And I've never had a day of problems, to be honest with you. I've got two lines with them now, and the service has been fantastic. I can probably put it down to, you know, they don't have as many clients as the other guys, perhaps. So good service will always be there, I guess. You know, if you have a smaller client base, perhaps that's how I feel about it. But I haven't had a problem with them. I'm a very happy Cell C fiber customer.
Yeah,
but then it comes down to price and performance and features and reliability.
I've also had very few problems on my Vumatel line. I am currently with Cool Ideas, but I do switch ISPs from time to time. Cool Ideas is fantastic.
For the cause, Duncan.
Yeah, for the cause. Mm-hmm. Test them all out. At least try to. There's so many of them. You can't obviously get to all of them. But my Vumatel line has been rock solid. I think it's been down for about – it went down for about 3 hours once, and that was the only downtime I had in a year and a half.
I
think there was one or two instances where it was down for maybe 5 minutes, and I think it was an ISP issue rather than a line-related issue. So it's been rock solid. But, in terms of the actual fiber infrastructure, I think the mobile operators are quite a long way behind Telkom Telkom and Vumatel. And certainly Shamil is saying they're going to be ramping up investment in the space, so it's going to get more competitive. You can, of course, buy Vodacom for fiber as an ISP, Vodacom as an ISP on top of Vumatel, and I think on top of OpenServe as well, although I stand to be corrected there. Certainly on top of Vumatel, and their prices seem to be quite in line with the other providers.
Yeah, look, it makes sense for everybody if they've got the ability to do it. I guess just gives the consumer more option. I'm still surprised every now and then when I look at the pricing page on that Vumatel kind of back-end page where you log in, where it shows you all the packages you can get. And, you know, once in a while I pop in there just to see what's around, see if there's any cool features and services. And there's one or two that seem to be kind of just out of sync with everybody else, nothing major, but you can get some really good deals. What I think we're going to start seeing soon is these fiber companies start offering things like 54-inch TVs or 68-inch TVs with a one-year contract on their ISP.
Makes sense.
You have to start enticing people. What's a differentiator? Because to be honest with you, 20-meg fiber or 50-meg fiber is 50-meg fiber. It's really that good, generally speaking. The things that differentiate is client customer services.
Yeah.
And with Celsius, I've had some good services because the guys come out, you kind of get to build a little relationship with them. And then if you have any queries or issues in the future, you know who to speak to, which is fantastic. But yeah, when it comes to the differentiator, I think we're going to start seeing some interesting add-ons for customers.
You're right. It's been mainly just selling bandwidth up to now. But I think some ADSL ISPs have been doing that in the past, selling TVs and stuff with your connection. Yeah. But I'm surprised. You're right. I'm surprised there isn't more of it going on, especially in the fiber space, where it would make sense to package Netflix and all these other things with it.
You know, what I would also like to see is some, you know, give me some better router options. And I'm saying that specifically because I've recently tested this gaming router, and it makes a big difference if you have a better brains where your fiber comes into the house. You know.
Yeah. Especially if you've got on one of the really speedy packages, 100 meg or higher, then it really does make sense to have a good router.
Yeah, give me an option of some routers that I really enjoy using, or and some of them could go up to $5,000-$6,000, so it makes sense to bolt it on to, give it to me, hopefully at a no interest finance package, and just bolt it on to my monthly charge.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, the fiber market certainly continues to be interesting. So thanks so much for your message, and please keep them coming. 071-999-1111. Please send us a WhatsApp voice note or a text message, but we prefer voice notes because we can include them on the show. And tell us what you think of the show, what we're talking about. Do you have any particular views or questions? We'd love to hear from you. And you don't need to send them while we're recording live. Of course, you can send them any time during the week, and we can include them when we record, either on a Friday or, as now seems to be more the case, on a Sunday afternoon. But Richard, let's get into this week's show, and let's get going with the quiz. Do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. The first question: which regulations does the SABC want amended or scrapped that it says unfairly benefits paid TV operators, including MultiChoice?
Diamond giant De Beers has started tracking gems using which technology?
Third question: which Chinese smartphone giant is expected to launch an initial public offering soon, making billionaires out of its founders?
And Vodafone is spending 18 billion euros buying European telecommunications assets from which company?
And the final question: China Telecom Global is set up internet points of presence in South Africa in partnership with which operator?
That's our quiz this week. As always, we'll get to the answers at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's news. And Richard, as I mentioned on the show last Sunday, I'd be spending quite a bit of my time at ICASA's offices this week, which I indeed did do. Didn't make it to all the presentations, but did make it to some of the key ones, including a part of MultiChoice's presentation on Friday, as well as the SABC's presentation and Cell C's presentation. Also had a chance to read through ETV's submission, although I didn't make it to the specific hearings. All very interesting stuff. If I'm going to summarize it, I guess I'd have to say that everyone except MultiChoice was arguing for more or tougher regulations in the pay TV market, and MultiChoice was arguing that they've got plenty of competition coming, the market is functioning, Netflix is giving us hell, and please don't impose any additional regulations on us because it will harm us and cost South African jobs. So two polarized positions, I guess. Multi-choice. Let's start with multi-choice submission on Friday. It was a very long. I unfortunately had to go through to Pretoria for a state IT agency press conference, so I wasn't able to stay for the whole thing. But I heard the bulk of Mark Rayner's presentation, and Mark is the chief operating officer for MultiChoice South Africa, and he made an impassioned plea to the regulator not to impose onerous regulations on MultiChoice, saying that they are indeed facing intense competition, and they argue unfair competition from Netflix, Amazon, YouTube, Apple, you name it. They listed it in their presentation. And, you know, I think the key part of their presentation was they were saying that, we are facing an existential threat from these streaming providers. Not only that, but Netflix et al. Do not pay tax in South Africa. I'm not quite sure how true that is. They don't employ people here, and they are not subject to regulations and fees, such as having to make contributions to the Media Development and Diversity Agency, as well as the Underserviced Area Access Agency. And they are they're saying this amounts to unfair competition. The SABC's hearing was quite interesting. They were quite strong views on the so-called must-carry regulations. These are regulations that state that pay TV operators, including MultiChoice, must carry the SABC's public service channels on their platforms. And the interpretation, and certainly what's been happening, is that MultiChoice and other pay TV operators, namely StarSat, I'm not sure if there are any others carrying SABC, can carry those channels for free of charge without having to pay the SABC for their carriage. And they've argued that this is, in fact, benefiting the pay TV sector and harming the free-to-air sector. And that's some of the most popular programming on DSTV, which is fascinating, by the way, is SABC, local SABC content, including soap operas and the like. I wouldn't have guessed that, but it appears that a lot of people subscribe to DSTV and then spend the bulk of their time watching SABC.
Local content. Yeah. Is that because their reception in there, in wherever they are, is not as good for the actual
coverage? It might be. I suspect it's on the lower end packages. So I think it's called Easy View and Access, the two entry level packages. And I suspect, you know, there's not a lot of channels on those platforms. Certainly not a lot of premium channels. So I think people are perhaps buying them for those a few additional channels that you get compared to terrestrial television, but are still using them mainly to consume free to air television content from SABC.
Well, I guess it shows you local content is still so much in demand, and people pay to get it.
Mm.
Fortunately, it's kind of a roundabout way if they use multi-choice to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you have to ask, why has SABC not kind of improved whatever their offerings was to help those customers who can't get good reception, for example?
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit. I don't know if it's to do with reception. It might be partially to do that, because I think that some of the SABC public service channels, especially SABC 3, don't have as big a coverage footprint than, say, SABC 1. So it may be a case of people using satellite to access the channels, because not all the channels are available where they live. I know that SABC 3 doesn't have as big a footprint as SABC 1 and SABC 2. So it could very well be to get access to that additional channel, and also the additional channels you get through Easy View and through DSTV Access at a relatively low cost. I think Access is $100 a month. I think Easy View is about $20 a month. So it's low cost, and you're getting more than you would get just through a normal analog TV service.
Well, I see a lot of satellite dishes around when I'm driving around looking at, you know, low-cost housing areas, or a lot of these informal housing properties alongside the roads. Virtually every one of those has satellite. Now, obviously, they're not going for the high-end packages, like you were saying now.
Yes.
But it must be, I mean, if that's the bulk of the content, it must be a reception. Why would you then spend extra money?
Or the additional channels, the few additional channels that you get, possibly. Maybe a bit of both.
But also, if you look at the location of a lot of these places and the amount of metal in between there, analog reception could literally be a problem.
Yeah, without an aerial on the roof, and if you're going to put an aerial on one, just put a dish on. Possibly, but it's interesting.
Very interesting. Look, it would be very interesting to take a deep dive into that and see user behavior. I wonder if there's studies out there about it.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. So ETV also presented, I read their written submission, and they made a very strong argument why MultiChoice's advertising should be capped. So they should not be allowed more than a certain amount of advertising. In fact, they argued that in terms of the Electronic Communications Act, MultiChoice may not derive more money from advertising than they do from subscription fees and sponsorships, which is interesting. They're arguing that the pay TV, the free-to-air sector in South Africa is in at real risk from a very strong pay TV sector. I did get the impression, though, that ETV was kind of lobbying for regulations to protect it, and I think they were looking for help to channel advertising revenue in their direction, and possibly unfairly. I certainly got the impression reading their representations in that regard. And then a lot of the guys who presented said that there needs to be some action on sports rights, splitting of sports rights, like Ofcom has done in the UK, preventing Sky from having rights over everything and allowing other broadcasters like BBC, BT, to offer soccer matches on their fiber platforms and that sort of thing. There was also a strong argument from Cell C, which I thought made a lot of sense. They said that that there shouldn't be a situation where a broadcaster buys up the rights across all platforms and then only uses one of the platforms, say satellite distribution, to make that available. So, for example, Super 15 rugby rights, Super Rugby, buying it all up and then only broadcasting it on say satellite TV, and when another broadcaster comes along and says, well, we want this for streaming, all the rights are sold to one broadcaster. So they put forward quite a strong argument there. But MultiChoice arguing that any regulations that come have to be light touch, and they risk damaging the industry, especially at a key point in the industry where increasingly people are starting to stream. They said that they've lost 100,000 customers in the last year to Netflix, DStv premium customers.
Do they know it's straight to Netflix? Because let's be honest, in people's pockets have become much tighter.
Yeah.
I know a few people that cancel just outright because they can afford it. Yes, they then go to a cheaper option, but it's not because of Netflix.
Yes, it could very well be the weak economy. Andy Casa, I'd left by that point, but I see there was a report in one of the Independent Group newspapers saying that one of the ICASA councillors asked them that exact question. Can you provide us with some proof that actually they've left to go to Netflix, and this is not just a case of unaffordability in a weak economic environment? You'll probably find it's a bit of both.
They do go hand in hand. But if you compare $800, what is it now, $800 versus 120, 130 rand on Netflix?
I think it's close to 1,000 rand now if you've got a PVR, I think it's around 960 or so for the DStv premium package with with what they call the PVR access fee, or I forget what they call it exactly. But it's not cheap on that high-end package. I suspect this is all going to, whatever the final regulations look like, it's mainly going to deal with the must-carry regulations, and it's also going to deal with sports rights. I suspect those are the two areas that ICASA will focus on if they decide to do regulations. How long is a piece of string when it comes to dealing with sports rights? I mean, you can be very light touch on it and perhaps introduce some very basic sort of regulations, or you could go the whole hog and say to MultiChoice, well, you need to unbundle SuperSport, make it a separate company, and allow it to sell its channels to anyone who is prepared to buy them from you.
Look, it's an industry-wide, this has an industry-wide impact. I mean, whoever sells a sports right should probably start looking at selling like they do in the States, where you have streaming rights and pay-per-view rights and then normal cable or broadcast rights for each event, so that you find that an event could be broadcast on a satellite channel and a streaming service. Yes, somebody's still going to lose out, but you're selling different rights because the industry's changed. We have various means of delivery for content now.
Yeah.
Unless the alternative would be to penalize SuperSport, I guess, and make them do something, which we don't. I guess we don't want to go down that route, because where do we stop with telling people what to do?
Exactly, and I'm certainly of the view that any regulations that are introduced should be light touch, if any regulations are introduced at all. I'm strongly of the view that regulations can distort markets, and the wrong regulations could end up damaging the industry. And I do think that at the end of the day, no matter what you think of MultiChoice and its pricing, they do deliver a good service, and they've done very well as a company. I mean, they're sure, you might disagree, that you might think that their DStv premium package, for example, is horrendously expensive. But at the end of the day, you don't have to pay for it. Sure, it's hard, especially if you're a sports lover and you want to watch the latest Premier League matches or the latest Super Rugby. But you know, this is not a it's not something that is a basic human right.
But you can also counter argue that they know South Africa is a sport loving nation.
Yeah,
and they probably should have taken better steps. I mean, this conversation on Super Sport has been going on since before our cord cut it in 2008 or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember people talking about, you know, the problem with Super Sport, and back then it was 600 bucks when I cancelled, 650 rand when I cancelled my subscription, which yes. Was that much back then, and that certainly wasn't necessarily the main reason for me cancelling.
Yeah.
But, you know, SuperSport really, or MultiChoice should have, with SuperSport, come up with a solution a long time ago. You know, yeah. Especially around the World Cup, it would have been the perfect way to introduce something. Obviously, you know, business interest would play first role. They still have shareholders to keep happy.
Mm.
But, you know, there could have been a solution, and I don't think they would have been pushed into a corner like this now if they had a relatively accessible means for people to access that content. They could have been the bigger player here and actually still own that channel if they did it well.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see what regulations. We'll obviously go through a set of draft regulations, at least one, probably more than one, before we see anything final, if any regulations are developed at all. ICASA seems to have been reluctant to try and regulate the space in the past. They've done almost nothing from a regulatory perspective. Whether something comes out of this, I don't know, but I'd certainly be in favor of light touch rather than onerous regulations being introduced in this space, which we all know can distort the market. MultiChoice is quite correct that the market is changing dramatically. They say, I mean, we know the world's going online. Streaming is the future. Linear satellite-based broadcasting could be dead in 20 years.
Yeah, probably is.
Could very well, probably will be. Yeah. So it was an interesting hearings this week, and we'll look forward to those draft regulations if they are ever forthcoming. So, speaking of policy and regulators and all the rest of it. Nomvula Mokonyane, who is our new Minister of Communications, and I forget how many that is now since 94. I think she's about the 11th or 12th Communications Minister, something like that.
Yeah.
And certainly there's been a high turnover in the last 5 years. But she's been very quiet ever since she was appointed, I think in February, towards the end of February, by the new president, Cyril Ramaphosa, has said nothing about digital migration. Which is obviously the most critical thing on her portfolio dealing with this. Anyway, she delivered a speech in Parliament on the occasion of her budget vote for her department, where she announced that she will be making an announcement soon.
She announced she'll be making an announcement.
She's looking for a panel to advise her. I just thought, oh, we've seen this movie before. So soon we will have an announcement, probably. Who knows what's going to happen? But it's all a bit of a joke at this stage. We are so far behind. She's talking about public-private partnerships. She's talking about the urgency of dealing with this issue, but every other minister before her spoke about the urgency of dealing with the issue, and not a heck of a lot happened. Excuse me if I'm cynical about this whole thing.
Sorry, what did you say?
I said, excuse me if I'm cynical about this whole thing.
No, but that's what I was saying. Actions over words, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, we'll hopefully know in a few weeks what her plans are. But don't hold your breath, Richard. Right, we need to take a quick ad break for our podcast listeners. For our live listeners, we'll be back right now.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fibre to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fibre, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehart?
How's it, Duncan?
Nice Sunday afternoon. You see, the weather is going utterly pear-shaped from tomorrow in Johannesburg.
You wouldn't say it looking outside right now.
It's going to be rainy and freezing cold tomorrow. So enjoy the last bit of summer weather this afternoon here in Joburg. It's all coming to an end.
I've got a cycling week planned. That's not good news
for me.
Oh, no. I can't be a fair weather cyclist, so that's fine.
Yeah, just put on your Wellington boots and your raincoat, and off you go. I hope the drone that follows you is waterproof.
Yeah, I'll just put it in a plastic Ziploc.
Might not fly too well. Naspers, flipping Flipkart to Walmart. This is the second major multi-billion dollar deal that Naspers has announced in the last month or so. Of course, they sold, I think it was 2% of their stake in Tencent for a huge amount of money. I forget the exact number. But now they've announced that they're selling their stake in Flipkart, which I think was around 11%. Now, Flipkart's a very big e-commerce retailer in India. And according to reports, there was background bidding going on between Walmart and Amazon to buy Flipkart, which is obviously a prized asset in a country with the second highest population in the world, just behind China, around 1.3 billion people, I think. Flipkart is I think the biggest e-commerce retailer in India, so obviously a massive opportunity there. And Naspers selling out. They weren't the biggest shareholder, but they had a significant stake, which they invested in quite a few years ago, and they realized a massive return on that sale. And they sold their 11% stake for 28 billion rand. So the Naspers balance sheet is starting to look quite healthy with all these sales. The question is, what are they going to do with it? And we know they've invested in a range of e-commerce, online classifieds type businesses around the world, and no doubt they're going to look to make further investments and hopefully find the next Flipkart and possibly find the next Tencent, although I don't think that's really going to happen.
Yeah, look, it's now about ownership of these big online portals and online spaces. And I'm eagerly just waiting for and Amazon is coming to South Africa add-on, because it seems like these companies are building up to something, you know. Other than someone is coming.
Walmart and Amazon do seem to be in a race against each other to buy up assets around the world and to expand into new markets. So Walmart, of course, is in South Africa already, just not with the Walmart brand. They own Massmart, which owns stores like Game, Macro, I forget which other ones. They've got a whole range. I think Dion Wired is one of their companies.
Yes.
So the Walmart is here already, but not with a big Walmart store, unfortunately. I think it's inevitable that Amazon's going to come here eventually. But I think they've got bigger fish to fry right now. I mean, India is obviously a much, much, much bigger and potentially more lucrative market than South Africa. Yeah. But, you know, once they've bedded down those big deals and built significant businesses in those markets, I'm sure they'll turn to smaller markets. Africa is an obvious one to come to, and South Africa is probably the market where they'd start. The question is, do they just come in or do they do an acquisition? I would imagine they would do an acquisition. And I think we've spoken about this before. The obvious target is Takealot, in which, of course, Naspers is a significant shareholder. They've made some good investments, Naspers, haven't they?
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, that should be a case study. You know, if I would go study this type of thing, I would like to look deeper at how they did what they did.
Yeah, I think part of it is fluke. I mean, I don't think Naspers ever thought that Tencent would turn into the thing it turned into. But it's probably there may be other examples, but it's possibly the most successful venture capital investment ever made.
Wow. Nice.
I forget how much they invested initially. I think it was something like $25 million. And their stake there now is worth something like $1.5 trillion. Rand, sorry, I forget the dollar amount. But it's significant. The return from investing in that business is unbelievable. And it was Antoine Roux. Do you remember Antoine Roux? He led that investment. He was the founding CEO of MWeb.
Yes. Mm. Oh, yeah, back in the day when MWeb was all the talk.
Yeah. He died. He died a few years ago. But he led that investment. He was up there in Hong Kong and Southeast Asia, and he was actively scouting for these investments. And it was him and his team that found Tencent, and with the backing of Chris Becker, they pulled the trigger on that investment. And it's been absolutely phenomenal for Naspers shareholders, and it's benefited. I mean, you can't underestimate the benefit that it's brought to South Africans as well, because pension funds, so many South Africans are indirectly invested in Tencent through Naspers, through unit trusts, through their pension funds, all that sort of thing. Mm. So it's been hugely lucrative, not just for Naspers, but for thousands, possibly even millions of South Africans.
Yeah, well, look, healthy South African businesses is good for South Africa. Or at least, you know, businesses based and actively operating, yeah.
Mm. So, Vodacom, I mentioned the podcast I did earlier this week with Shamil Jusub. Go have a listen to it if you haven't already. It's a 35-minute podcast, but really well worth a listen. We talk about a range of things, from ICT policy, the wholesale open access network, to competition in the space. He made some interesting remarks. He said the regulator should issue 5G spectrum now. Which is an interesting statement, given that 4G spectrum hasn't been allocated yet. But he made an impassioned plea, arguing that if we don't do this, we really are at risk of falling behind, because there is no plan B when it comes to 5G. With 4G, even though the operators still haven't been given access to the spectrum because of everything we know that's been going on in the background with policy and all the rest of it, the operators were able to roll out 4G LTE networks using existing spectrum assignments of 2G and 3G. So they've been refarming, is the term they use, or reallocating spectrum away from old 2G networks and reallocating it for data and 4G. They can't do that with 5G. They don't have the resources to do it. And I don't think the existing spectrum that they have is suitable for 5G anyway. So he's arguing that some of the spectrum for 5G is already available and lying fallow, and it should just be made available through the normal process of either auctioning it off or a beauty contest or whichever way you prefer to allocate spectrum, and not wait for the current impasse of policy that's slowing down the allocation of 4G spectrum. Now, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think the government's going to allow the allocation of 5G spectrum if they haven't even finished the policy on 4G spectrum. But it's an interesting one, and he was warning that we are going to fall behind as a country, and we are not going to be deploying leading technologies in this country unless the operators can get access to this 5G spectrum.
Can you say digital migration TV project?
Oh, God, that just makes me depressed.
Yeah, I mean, this really is a problem, because every time we fall behind on things like this, we become less lucrative to tech investors to bring their technologies here. You know, if we have these, and I'm not saying it's the only reason, but if we have these, you know, if we have these leading technologies running, but there was a time when we used to leapfrog all the world's best tech. I think 3G was a leapfrog tech.
We were one of the first countries in the world to deploy 3G.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I mean, it was fantastic. So again, you know, good news kind of story, but also, people look at us and say, okay, these guys are serious about tech. And whoever then tries to build a business around that tech in South Africa, you know, there's so many more benefits for them. And again, good economy as a result of it.
Yeah. We've got an election coming up now. I have my doubts that the policy issue around this is going to be sorted out before or after the election. I think we're going to have to wait, which is a problem because these operators need the spectrum. But let's talk about something more upbeat, Recha. Let's talk about Google, their big developer conference. I did watch most of it, but what for you were the highlights?
Well, look, I mean, Google for the first time in a while has really made me go, okay, if these things come to the next version of Android, I am switching full time. You know, I'm definitely putting my heart. Some of the coolest thing, obviously, the keynote. One of the things that was most spoken about was the Google Duplex voice assistant that can make calls on your behalf to do
books. Oh, yeah, that was spectacular.
Wow, yeah, that is pretty impressive. And I was joking, if that could do some of my work for me, I would be a very happy person.
Yeah.
Get some of those calls. And it's incredible to think that the technology is now in your hand, that you can have a virtual assistant, almost, you know, a real virtual assistant.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had some of the technology for a while where you could, you know, say to your phone to remind you of certain things and, you know, do that type of stuff. But now that it can actually outwardly be a function, I'm looking forward to seeing more about what they can do there. In the same vein of stuff on Google getting smarter, another one of my absolutely favorite features, and this is something I've been wanting for years, is a smart compose feature that they're introducing with Gmail that'll automatically, based on your previous emails, complete it. So if I say my address, find me at, it knows what your address is and it'll complete it. I mean, that makes so much sense.
Mm.
I mean, you know, typing a lot of mails, especially dealing with, you know, various people in the industry, in the media industry, there's a lot of the same type of replies that's often being sent.
Yes. No, makes, I'm not going to use your press release.
It'll almost be a default auto reply by the time. But I mean, it seems like a small thing, but it's making Gmail more powerful. And for businesses, again, you know, you've got already a very decent, very good back end that a lot of companies are using as their back end platform. Stuff like this, you know, it makes even more sense to, you know, to have smarter email composing. Google Maps was another product that is going to be receiving a major update. And the feature there that completely blew everyone away is their Street View AR overlay that allows you to, when you search for any place to go, if you're walking around, this AR overlay allows you to hold up your phone in the direction that you're going to be walking, and it'll actually guide you. Are you walking in the right direction? No, you should probably turn around. It's a very cool feature, especially if you're going to be, you know, be a tourist in another country. I think Google Maps has already helped in that department, you know, so hugely. If you look at what they've done for just maps and allowing people to quickly get to places, but this is a very cool feature, and I can see potential, you know, ability after that we can do with AR, you know, better maps, put this stuff in your car. I mean, there's some interesting things I think that we're going to see off that. And then, obviously, they introduced Android P's public beta, which, that's the one I'm really looking forward to, the new next version of Android. They've announced some of the devices are going to come out on. I don't know if you've seen anything on that list that was jumping out at you, but...
not particularly on Android, no. It was just refinements, really. I think the voice assistant stuff was the coolest stuff. And I think the most interesting stuff that came out of Google I/O this year was the stuff that was powered by artificial intelligence, like the assistant.
Yes.
I was a bit skeptical about that assistant, though, in the real-world calls where it makes a call on your behalf to your hair salon or whatever. I can't see that working in practice for many years still.
No, for sure. But look, don't underestimate how quickly AI learns. Once you have a technology that's kind of ready to roll out, and if this is mature enough, it could learn. I mean, it just needs to learn language and understand what people are saying to it and learn the responses. I think South Africa is going to be a tricky industry. I don't think get in South Africa. So
yeah.
If you do a demo, you know, I've never had a conversation that goes back and forth like that so smoothly. I mean, there's usually at least 75 repetitions of what I want to say or order, or, you know, there's like, so I agree. It's not, but the fact that they've got this and it's going to be a feature that's working. I mean, it's,
They haven't set a release date for it yet. So it's still a work in progress. But it's exciting. It's exciting. There's no doubt that it's exciting. And I see there's already some concern expressed about people not knowing whether this is actually a machine that's calling you or not, because the voice is that good. And Google responded to say that that its voice assistant will introduce itself as the Google assistant before it speaks to you.
Oh, interesting. Look, I'll probably be more worried about marketers using this. So, you know, that could be a bigger problem if they get hold of, well, they will get hold of this technology. I mean, there will be other AI technologies and voice systems. But this is without a doubt the way technology is taking us. You know, I was skeptical about, you know, voice assistants on your phone to begin with, you know, speak your phone to remind you, Siri, you know, all those kind of things. I don't really use it today still. But I guess the concept of the technology is solid, but it's just not practical in my day-to-day yet, I guess. Something like this, you know, as the technology increases, I kind of get more familiar with it, start using it more, and then it becomes kind of, once everybody starts introducing it in their life as a, oh, this is just another standard feature in my life, I think then we'll start seeing some really interesting AI tech advances.
Yeah, no, it was the best Google I/O event I've seen, I think, since the one where they did the skydive into the conference center. Do you remember that one?
Yes, we had to
about 5 years ago.
They had to point at the skydive. I love the tech behind it.
That was a fantastic Google I/O, but this one was very good as well. It was one of the better ones I've seen. And that's our news this week. Let's move along to our regular features. Our winner this week is Setumo Mohapi. He's the CEO of the state IT agency and a guy who has an unenviable job. I went to a press conference in Pretoria. It's the reason I left MultiChoice's hearings at ICASA a little early on Friday, was to go through to Pretoria to hear Setumo Mohapi talking about the progress they're making in fighting corruption in the agency. And it really is a major problem. He says they're making very good progress, they are locking out the crooks, basically. I think he's got a very, very tough job, a very unpleasant job. He was formerly CEO of Centec, and I think he was very disappointed to have been taken out of that environment, although he's never publicly said so. I get the impression that he really loved the job at Centec, and he was redeployed, as these things tend to happen in government, into the state IT agency. But he's tackled it, taken the bull by the horns, if you like. And he is cleaning it out, and he is not taking prisoners. He is warning people that if there is any transgressions of ethics or any looting or any corruption uncovered, they will be fired and they will be prosecuted. 180 people have left CETA's employment, either because they've been fired, they have been suspended, or they have resigned under a cloud since he took over 3 years ago.
Wow, that's a huge number.
It's a massive number.
It's like probably everybody, every at least in every key position.
Yeah. that's Setumo Mohapi. Hell of a nice guy, very soft spoken, one of the nicest guys you could possibly meet, and he's just getting on with the job. And as I said on Twitter a couple of days ago, we need more guys like him in government.
Yes.
And our loser this week is ZTE. Although I was tempted to pick Donald Trump for putting his ZTE into the situation it's in, they're facing an existential threat now. They've basically been told that they can't buy any components from the US from vendors such as Intel, Qualcomm, anyone you could imagine, possibly even Android from Google, due to them allegedly violating sanctions and selling products, I think, into Iran or one or two other markets. But this is a major problem for ZTE. If they can't get access to crucial components for their technology, they're in a lot of trouble, and their share price has been suspended. There's a possibility this company's going to go to the wall. It's that serious. So our loser this week is ZTE, although perhaps the runner-up loser this week is Donald Trump for his nationalist policies. ZTE may have breached some sanctions, but the response does seem to be rather inappropriate. Yeah. Rather fine them. Don't threaten their business. And it just makes the world a more unstable place, I think, as tensions ratchet up between the US and China over this trade war. But it's a worrying situation, and a lot of networks, including networks here in South Africa, use ZTE, some of them extensively, especially in Africa. use ZTE in their networks extensively, and I think the guys who built those networks must be a bit worried about the current situation at that Chinese company. So what's your pick this week, Richard?
All right. So I've been playing with the wonderful world of Windows full-time again with this wonderful test rig that I'm using to edit my videos.
Android and Windows, man, what's happening to you?
I know. It's like beautiful. I'm getting back to journalism, Richard, 2000, circa 2003. So I've been playing with Windows. Obviously, nothing much to report on that front. I am looking forward to the new update coming out soon. But my pick for this week, because I've got a lot of stuff on, in the Apple ecosystem and in the Apple world, all of my hard drives are basically.
Oh, Richard, I've just lost you. And Richard's back. How's it?
You just dropped, or I just dropped. Either way, sorry.
Okay, let me just do a voice marker for the podcast, and then carry on with those thoughts.
So yes, I've been playing with Windows. Love it. Nothing to report there, but I've been playing with a little tool called HFS Plus for Windows. And like I said, a lot of my hard drives, all of my hard drives, are for the Mac ecosystem, so they're all formatted, for the Mac OS. And that's a problem if you got a Windows, if you introduce Windows into the mix, because you can't see and write to those partitions. So with a Paragon Software's HFS Plus, it's basically a plug. It's a little installation file that just runs in the background of your Windows computer, and it allows you to write to Mac-based volumes. And it's basically saved me a lot of effort. To obviously reformat my drives, I can just use everything as is. Obviously, with any new drives, I will have them formatted correctly. But I've been a huge fan of Paragon software for many years. I've got a lot of tools that works both ways for between Apple and Windows ecosystems. And I've done this a few times where I need to write to various drives. So that I've got running on my Mac OS at the moment that allows me to write to Windows drives on a network. So Paragon software is well worth checking out, but HFS Plus specifically, if you want to read and write to Mac partitions on a Windows computer.
Cool. Check it out. I picked a game this week. I haven't done that in a while. Game called Frostpunk for Windows. It may be available for other platforms, but I'm playing it on Windows via Steam. And it's a great deal of fun. It's a little city builder. But basically, the world has been destroyed, and you've got to restart it. New Ice Age, and it starts in this kind of volcano, I suppose, or a crater, it looks like. You've got to restart the generator, build a little town, mine wood and coal, keep your people from dying, otherwise they will force you out of town and you die in the snow. It's a fantastic little game. A little hat tip to Greg for tipping me off about it. But it's a great little time waster, and the graphics are absolutely mind-blowing. Very, very good graphics. So if you enjoy city builders, if you like SimCity and that sort of thing, even The Sims, Frostpunk is really, really well done. Great little game, and not too expensive. I forget the price, but it's
$175.
There we go. It's worth every worth every cent.
My card now.
There goes the rest of your Sunday, Richard.
Yeah, thank you so much for that.
It's a pleasure. And I think that's our show, apart from our quiz results. Let me do the first question. Which regulations does the SABC want amended or scrapped that it says unfairly benefit pay TV operators, including MultiChoice, and that is the must-carry regulations?
Second question. Diamond giant De Beers has started tracking gems using which technology? And the answer is obviously the blockchain.
Which Chinese smartphone giant is expected to launch an initial public offering soon, making billionaires out of its founders? And that is Xiaomi.
Fourth question. Vodafone is spending 18 billion euros buying European telecommunications assets from which company? And the answer is Liberty Global.
And the final question in this week's quiz. China Telecom Global is to set up internet points of presence in South Africa in partnership with which operator? And that is Liquid Telecom. And that's our show. Do remember, if you want to send us some feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Use the WhatsApp number. Of course, you can email us, info@techcentral.co.za. But rather send us a voice note and we can include you in our next show. The number is 071-999-1111. 071-999-1111. Do you have any views on what we discussed today, or any questions you'd like to ask of either me or Rehout in our next show? And we'd be happy to attempt to answer them anyway. And that's our show from Rehout and myself. Until next week. Cheers.
Ciao.